Chapter 14. Death in the Fortress of Hera. I am brother to dragons and a companion to owls. My skin is black upon me, and my bones are burned with heat. From the Old Earth religious text known as Job's Book.
Our guests, my lord, said Verus Caspian, master of the second, are being escorted to the Campus Cohortum.
Any resistance? Asked Gilliman.
Caspian shook his head. He had a sleek skull with very tightly cropped grey hair and high cheekbones framing a blade of nose. The shake of his head made Gilliman think of the warning sway of a mountain hawk.
Our guests have made no resistance, he replied, again stressing the word guests. They have allowed themselves to be escorted to confinement.
Have they surrendered weapons?
Some of them have, lord, said Caspian, but we have not made that demand of them. As per your instructions, we are treating them as respected battle-brothers, and regarding this as the unfortunate accident that their lord claims it to be.
How many?
A strength in excess of 5 companies, as our legion would consider it. I have little patience with their wings and cohort divisions.
So, enough to kill this city.
Caspian paused.
Easily, he replied. Whatever else I think of them today, I am in no doubt of the capability and ferocity of the first. If we had dropped the city shields and their intent had been malicious, the Civitas would be burning, and the death toll unthinkable.
Tell me when they are all confined, Gilliman said. Have their drop pods recovered and transported for holding at Fortress Monita? I will not have the reminders of an invasion, no matter how peaceable and unintentional it may have been, littering my city and scaring my population. Has Augustine made the announcements?
Yes, lord, said Caspian. He has made 2 statements over the Civitas address system, and they are being looped on the civilian data feeds. I was impressed. He was quite reassuring. He insisted that there was no cause for general concern, and that it was merely a practical training exercise conducted in conjunction with the 13th.
Whose idea was that? Asked Gilliman.
Augustine's. It also helped that Holguin of the Dark Angel stood with him during the address and added his voice to the statement.
For that we can be thankful, said Gilliman.
He glanced along the length of the room. Through open doors in an adjacent part of the residency, he could see the lion sitting alone, deep in thought.
Have the confined officers interviewed, Gilliman told Caspian. Make it a polite but firm debriefing. Make sure their story matches my brother's. This may well be an accident, but I want to know how it happened.
Caspian saluted, his mailed fist clunking off his breastplate. He turned and left the chamber.
Gilliman turned and looked at Valentus Dolor. The Tetrarch was waiting attentively by the windows.
An accident? Gilliman asked.
A strange one, Dolor replied. But why would you not trust his word?
Because he is the lion.
He seemed mortified.
Gilliman snorted.
He had a drop force loaded and waiting. A readied invasion. As he received my toast and sat at my table, he had an assault force of 5 companies set to fall upon this city.
Consider, my lord, said Dolor, if the situation were reversed, and we stood at fleet strength off the proverbial green shores of Caliban, would you not have done the same? Would you not have had your finest prepped to move without any delay if the need arose?
Gilliman did not reply.
I think you would, said Dolor with a sad smile. In fact, I know you would. The core values of theoretical and practical would not have allowed you to do anything else. These are dark days, the darkest we have known. The events of this night are his fault.
Gilliman shot another glance down the length of the chamber to look at the brooding lion.
My brother? He asked.
Yes. But not the one you stare at, said Dolor. I mean the War Master.
This blight of conviction, this loss of faith, this caution and suspicion that means that the proud sons of the greatest family in the cosmos cannot trust one another, it is down to him and what he has done.
Gilliman realized that he had clenched both of his fists. He forced himself to uncurl them.
I believe I would have shown more trust in him than that, he said. Would you? Asked Dolor. Do you? The long shadow of the Lupercal means we play our cards closer to our chests than ever. We keep our secrets tight. Have you, for example, told your brother of the one who resides howling like a bedlam fool in the Medicae Hall? I have not, Gilliman hissed, quickly raising his left hand to excuse his spark of anger. Then think of your secrets and the reasons you keep them while you examine his.
Good counsel, as ever, Valentus, said Gilliman. Wait upon me here. I think it is time my brother and I talked more frankly. Dolor made his salute and a respectful bow of his head. Gilliman walked through the doors into the chamber where the lion sat. The Lord of the First occupied one of the large-scale chairs. A fire had been lit in the chamber's grate, and the lion was intently watching the flames as they softly consumed the wood. What was he thinking? Of forests, dark forests beloved by him, similarly consumed? It was a burden. Gilliman reminded himself that at least he knew the fate and status of his home world. What fears filled the lion's heart when he thought of his forested fortress, now presumably inaccessible beyond the ruin storm's wrath?
Not the evening of feasting and good comradeship I was expecting, said Gilliman.
Nor I, the lion agreed, looking up.
How much would you have needed, brother? Gilliman asked.
He walked to a side table and poured wine from a jug into two goblets of frosted white glass.
How much of what? Asked the lion.
Provocation, said Gilliman.
How many lines would I have had to cross? How many failings would you have needed to detect in me and my legion?
What, to attack you?
Yes, it may indeed have been prudent, brother, but you came to my world fully prepared to strike at me if I was found wanting. Your men were loaded and ready, your pods primed, the vectors set. You have admitted to my face that you came here with no qualms about sanctioning me if I was found fit to sanction. So what would it have taken?
The lion took the goblet that Gilliman proffered.
Your ambition, Rabute. It was always your greatest strength and your greatest flaw. No two brothers more ambitious than you and Horus. It has seen you build an empire. If I had come and found you stealing another, then I would have struck.
He rose to his feet and sipped the wine.
Honesty is your other great strength, brother, the lion said. Again, it is another strong trait you share with Horus.
That name can only be spoken so many times within the residency before I reach for my sword, said Gilliman.
The lion laughed.
Quite so, but my point is a valid one. Before he fell, Horus was an honest creature. Noble and honest. I always thought of the two of you as very alike. Admire him or despise him, one was never in any doubt as to his ambitions. He was honest. He made no secret that he wanted to be the best of all, the first among equals, the first son by merit and not numerical fact. He wanted to be War Master. He wanted to be heir. His honesty was naked.
But that honesty has gone.
Indeed it has, said the lion. When he fell, however he fell, his honesty peeled away from him. He became a lord of lies, a great betrayer, a being capable of the worst deceit and falsity that we can imagine or even bear to think of. But you are honest still.
The lion looked at Gilliman.
When I came to you, you opened your heart to me.
You told me of your fears, of the wounds you carry, of the principle and nature of your fight, and of your intentions for Imperium Secundus. That stayed my hand, to see the honesty in you still.
He took another sip of wine. The goblet was made of white Servian glass, and it glowed like a chalice. It contrasted sharply with the dark gauntlet that held it, with the armour hued a shade of black known in the ancient language as Caliborn. The goblet had more warmth in it than shone from the lion's pale skin. The wine looked like blood.
"Part of your honesty, Rabute," he said, "was to remind me that I am not an open book. I have always found it hard to trust and be trusted."
"But you are admired and beloved."
"That is not the same thing at all. I have my secrets. Men may keep secrets for good reasons."
"Then if we are to put this behind us and step forward from this day side by side as allies, I must open my heart further," said Gilliman. "There is something."
The knock of a fist against the chamber door interrupted him. Gilliman paused, annoyed, wishing to unburden himself fully now that he had begun. Yet he knew full well that no one would knock without a pressing reason.
"Enter," he said. It was Niax Nessus, Master of the Third.
"I apologize for the intrusion, my lord," he said, "but it is imperative that you see this. Also, your noble brother's voted lieutenant wishes to speak with him urgently."
Farith Redlos stood in the doorway behind Nessus, flanked by several of Gorod's hulking warriors.
"We will continue this conversation in a moment," Gilliman said to the lion, drawing Nessus to one side and taking a data slate from him.
The lion went to the door and stepped out to meet Farith Redlos. Redlos moved his lord down the hallway, a little away from the bodyguards. He passed the lion a data slate marked with the First Legion's icon. The lion read it.
"Tell me this is not so," he said.
"It is confirmed."
This is the cause," the lion growled.
"It took a gene print to launch the assault. We have swabbed the device. It is confirmed."
"Then he's on the surface?"
"Ingeniously so," said Redlos. "He used the lives of our battle brothers to make Gilliman throw open the door for him."
The lion's lips trembled in rage. "Find him," he whispered.
"Lord, I..."
"Find him."
"The Ultramarines will not permit free movement in the Civitas precinct, my lord, so..."
"Then be ingenious. Find him."
Redlos nodded. "Will you tell him, lord?" he asked. "Will you tell Gilliman?"
"We cannot explain it," said Nessus to his lord in a low voice.
Gilliman thumbed his way through the slate's data log for the third time.
"A squad dead?"
"Menius's troop in Barium Square, not less than 30 minutes ago. They were not just killed, they were silenced. They were torn apart."
"This isn't the work of the Dark Angels."
"It does not look like their handiwork at all, nor would that answer make much sense. Why this one incident, if all the others stood down peacefully?"
"Something else was in that pod," said Gilliman.
"Indeed. Theoretical, it slew the original occupants and took their place. We're analysing the blood found in the pod now."
"What has he brought here? What has he brought to my world?"
"Your noble brother?" asked Nessus.
"My lord, this may be something he has no knowledge of. He..."
"It was on his ship. It was in his pod. It killed his men. He must know what he has brought here."
Gilliman looked at Nessus.
"Inform Augustine. We raise our security status to Ready 1, city-wide and in the fortress. Mobilize in strength, household and legion. Scour Barium Square and the routes out of it. Gene traces, footprints, blood trails, anything. Access security pictures in the deem. Something or someone must have caught a glimpse. I want to know what this is and where it's going. I want it found, and I want it stopped before it kills again."
Nessus snapped off his salute and turned to leave the room. The lion was re-entering.
"What have you brought here?" Gilliman asked.
"I'm sorry. What?" the lion replied, pausing in the doorway.
"If my face is anything like yours, brother," said Gilliman, walking up to him, "and I believe it is a great deal more open, then we have both been recipients of disturbing news. So I ask again, what have you brought here?"
"Farith Redlos was simply confirming the facts of the incident," said the lion. "A mechanical failure, probably the result of storm damage. I wanted an answer quickly, and it has been provided. The pod drop was..."
"No," said Gilliman.
He took another step towards the lion.
"We just spoke, brother to brother, of the need for honesty. We spoke more freely than we have ever spoken. You told me that my honesty is why you stayed your censure, and admitted to me that you could be far too closed at times. We agreed that only true honesty would allow the Emperor's loyal sons to stand against the darkness and drive it back. So we start now."
Gilliman held up the data slate that Nessus had given him, so that the lion could read the report on its screen surface.
"What is this?" Gilliman snarled. "Tell me what you have brought to Macragge, or by the name of Ultramar, I swear I will put you through that wall."
"You will try," the lion replied, stiffening.
"Damn you, brother, trust me and speak the truth now, or we are done and finished. What have you brought to Macragge?"
The lion sighed.
"Conrad," he said.
The wall was high, high and mighty, but it was just a wall. Walls could be climbed and gates opened. Veins could be opened, too. Less than a shadow, curs rippled up the Aegis wall like a black autumn leaf fluttered upwards by the night breeze. Above him, like a geometric mountain, towered the bulwarks of the fortress. The sons of Ultramar marched from this great bastion, so eager to boast of their prowess and their fortitude, so eager to celebrate their courage. Curs reached the rim of the wall and vaulted onto the parapet. He looked back over the city below, a sea of lights, the night sky with its one foul glowing star, shimmered behind the relit void shields. Sentries on circuit were approaching. He could see them in his mind before he smelled the dry heat of their power armor. He opened a shadow, slid into its embrace, and extended his claws. He was inside the fortress of Hera, inside the cradle of the haughty Ultramarines. Tonight, at last, and long, long past time, they would know fear. John woke. He was in a basement or cellar, tied to a wooden chair. There was a tang of blood in his mouth. The word-bearer sat facing him on a metal crate. His weapon lay across his lap in its case. John's carry bag stood on the floor at his feet.
"What do you want?" John asked.
"To renegotiate and then conclude the business we began on Traoris," said the word-bearer.
"Narek...
Call me Lord. Show me respect."
"I do not feel I am in a position to negotiate much," said John.
His head hurt, but he reached out with his mind anyway. Perhaps... No, it was futile. John's initial suspicions had been correct. The talk around the word-bearer's throat was a powerful psychic hood. Narek had come prepared.
"You want it," said John. "Take it."
Narek did not reply for a while. He kept his gaze fixed on John Grammaticus. Then he put aside his cased rifle and reached down to the carry bag. He took a bundle out of it, unwrapped it, and held the fulgurite spear up in the half-light. It didn't look like much, a forked spearhead of dull grey mineral, unfinished, no longer than a gladius. But it was a piece of the Emperor's psychic lightning,
fused into a fulgurite in the sands of Traoris. It was a weapon of extraordinary power. With it, one could kill a god. Or, most certainly, one could kill the son of a god, even the one son of a god who was impossible to slay otherwise.
"It is potent," said Narek. "I can feel the life in it, the power. It is godlike."
"It is a fragment of divinity," said John, "or something as close to divinity as we will ever know."
"I could take it and leave you dead," said Narek.
"This is entirely what I expect," said John. Narek turned the spearhead over in his hands.
"One thing has become clear to me," he said. "Through my pursuit of you here and on Traoris, this is a powerful weapon. But you are a notable being too. You would not have been charged with the recovery and use of this if you were not something special."
"I'm just an agent for—"
"You are a perpetual,"
John faltered.
"I—" "So old, so rare, so forgotten. You are the legend of a legend, the myth of a myth. But the word-bearers are the keepers of the word and the law, and in our histories are even the ghosts of myths remembered. The old ones, the long-lived ones, the eternal kind, the first and last, the perpetuals."
"It's more complicated than that," said John. "A lot more complicated than that in my case. I—"
"The details don't matter," said Narek. "I know what a perpetual is capable of. I understand. After all, we are all proof of what the oldest and most powerful perpetuals can do."
"What is that?"
"Build an imperium."
John let his head drop, and he exhaled slowly.
"Just kill me, Narek," he said. "Has your life been so endless that you long for death?"
"I know when I'm beaten," John replied. There had been a flash of truth in the word-bearer's remark. John was tired, but death was not a permanent state in his case. The Cabal saw to that. If he could goad Narek enough, death might become an escape route, and—
"The spear is powerful, John Grammaticus," said Narek, "but I fancy it is even more powerful when one of your kind wields it. So you become, you see, part of the weapon."
"There is some truth in that," said John. There seemed little point lying.
"Then I will take you both, you and the spear. As one, you will be my weapon for the purpose I have ordained."
"And what would that purpose be, Narek?"
"Respect," hissed the word-bearer.
"What would that purpose be, my lord?" asked John. "I know why I want the spear. I know what deed is expected of me. What do you intend to do with it?"
"I intend," said Narek, "to perform holy work. I intend to cleanse the soul of my legion of the demonic pollution that contaminates it."
He held up the spear tip. Despite its dull finish, they could both see the tiny flashes of power that coursed through it.
"I intend to save the Legion of the Word-Bearers," said Narek, "and you are going to help me accomplish that."
"How?" asked John Grammaticus. "What exactly do you intend to do?"
"I will cleanse the soul of my legion," said Narek, "by seeking out and slaying Lorgar Aurelian."
My lord, no," Gorod cried.
"Curse!" Gilliman roared.
With one hand, he had smashed the lion back into the wall. He held him there by the throat.
"You brought that monster to my world?"
"Unhand me," said the lion.
"Answer. I have not resisted you, Rabute, but you molest me. Unhand me, or we will swiftly discover which of us is the superior combatant."
"My lord," Gorod repeated. The bodyguard had closed around them, hoping that they would not be obliged to drag the Primarchs apart. They did not want to lay a hand upon their master, the Avenging Son. Gilliman did not loosen his grip.
"Tell me how this happened. Tell me about Curse."
The lion's hands remained at his sides. He did not resist the fury and the formidable pressure pressing him into the wall, but it was plainly a feat of determination not to.
"Since Thramas, I have held several officers of his legion prisoner," the lion said, "including that bastard known as Sevatar. Kurz was on my ship too, loose in the unregulated decks. I hunted him. He could not escape, but I could not capture him. It appears he has now made his exit."
"Upon your arrival, this wasn't the first thing you chose to tell me," asked Gilliman, "that one of the worst of our traitor brothers hides within your flagship?"
"In hindsight, I could have been more open," said the lion. "In truth, as we are speaking plainly, I was ashamed that I could not confine him. I would gladly have brought him before you in chains, on his knees and pleading, so we might have sequestered him in your darkest dungeons. While he was free, however, he was my problem, my curse to contend with."
"But you didn't," said Gilliman. "And men are dead because of it, and more will die, and we are at each other's throats."
"Quite literally," said the lion, looking down at Gilliman's crushing hand.
Gilliman released his grip and stepped back. The lion stood up properly.
"That will not happen again," said the lion.
"It might," replied Gilliman.
"Not that way around."
"Don't test me, brother," Gilliman snapped. "Can you not see the anger in me?"
"I can, but I am better at hiding things, and you clearly cannot see the anger in me. That will not happen again."
"Then make sure of it. Your men will help my men find this monster," Gilliman said.
"Agreed."
"No more lies, Lion. No more secrets."
"Agreed. Let me contact Holguin and..."
Alarms started to ring throughout the residency. "Perimeter breach, the fortress," said Gorod, reading the data flow off his visor.
"Which means?" asked the lion.
"Well, unless you have any other surprises you haven't told me about," said Gilliman.
"He's here. He's on the castrum. He's in the fortress. Kurz is here."
His eyes widened. His mouth opened and looked as though it was screaming, though no sound came out.
"I don't like this," said Captain Casimir. "What's he doing?"
The Medicaid staff shook their heads. Behind the armor glass, the insane Primarch flexed his hands and howled without sound. His dark skin was still healing and still bleeding. He resembled some grotesque revenant, some grisly spectre that had fled death and returned from the grave.
"Get someone," said Casimir.
"Who?" asked the chief attending.
"I don't know. Tetrarch Dolor. Gilliman himself."
Several aides began to back away to do as he ordered, but no one wanted to take their eyes off Vulcan. There was a sense of power in him, terrible power and terrible purpose. Madness still invested his eyes, but it was focused now, as though all his wrath and pain had been concentrated into one thing. He was mouthing something over and over again.
"What is that? What's he saying?" asked Casimir.
"He's just raving," the chief attending replied.
"No, that word," Casimir stepped forward. "Read his lips. He's saying..."
Casimir turned and looked at the Medicaid staff and the guards.
"He's saying... Kurz."
Vulcan screamed the name of his tormentor. He locked his bloody fingers together and began to smash his fists against the glass like a pounding hammer in a forge, like the working, toiling beat of a smithy, making and unmaking, shaping and unshaping. The armor glass wall, smeared with the blood of his previous blows, shivered. It vibrated. It cracked.
"Seal this level, now," yelled Casimir. "Seal it!"
Vulcan's fists kept pounding. The glass cracked more broadly. Then the whole wall exploded in a blizzard of fragments. Vast, dark, murderous, Vulcan stepped out of his cage.
Casimir and other ultramarines rushed forward in desperation to restrain him, but he threw their armoured forms aside as though they were dolls. Vulcan was free. In his madness, he would not be stopped. Not again. Not by anything.